Chapter 3. Back to School. Early the next morning, there was a voice in the dark, in Jacob's room. A groan. And I woke up to find my body already moving, swinging up onto its feet, shuffling around the foot of the bed. Still dense with sleep, I passed out of the gloom of the bedroom, through the gray light of dawn in the hallway, then back into darkness again in my son's bedroom. I turned on the wall switch and adjusted the dimmer. Jacob's room was cluttered with huge, oafish sneakers, a MacBook covered with stickers, an iPod, school books, paperback novels, shoeboxes filled with old baseball cards and comic books. In a corner, an Xbox was hooked up to an old TV. The Xbox discs and their cases were piled nearby, mostly combat roleplay games. There was dirty laundry, of course, but also two stacks of clean laundry neatly folded and delivered by Lori, which Jacob had declined to put away in his bureau because it was easier to pluck clean clothes right from the piles. On top of a low bookcase was a group of trophies Jacob had won when he was a kid playing youth soccer. He had not been much of an athlete, but back then every kid got a trophy, and in the years since he had simply never moved them. The little statues sat there like religious relics, ignored, virtually invisible to him. There was a vintage movie poster for a 1970s chop socky picture, Five Fingers of Death, which featured a man in a karate outfit smashing his well-manicured fist through a brick wall. The martial arts masterpiece. See, one incredible onslaught after another. Pale before the forbidden ritual of the steel palm. Cheer the young warrior who alone takes on the evil warlords of martial arts. The clutter in here was so deep and permanent, Lori and I had long since stopped fighting with Jacob to clean it up. For that matter, we had stopped even noticing it. Lori had a theory that the mess was a projection of Jacob's inner life, that stepping into his bedroom was like stepping into his chaotic teenage mind, so it was silly to nag him about it. Believe me, this is what you get when you marry a shrink's daughter. To me, it was just a messy room, and it drove me crazy every time I came into it. Jacob lay on his side at the edge of his bed, not moving. His head was arched back, and his mouth hung open like a howling wolf. He was not snoring, but his breathing had a clotted sound. He had been fighting a little cold. Between sliffy breaths, he whimpered, No. Jacob, I whispered. I reached out to soothe his head. Jake. He cried again. His eyes fluttered behind the eyelids. Outside, a trolley clattered by, the first train into Boston on the Riverside Line, which passed every morning at 6:05. It's just a dream, I told him.